Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, good evening. You unfortunate bastards have found another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, Frankie Avalon goes to Hollywood. Because tonight we're watching Blood Song. Check out the trailer.
I told you this place was giving me nightmares. I keep seeing some lunatic killing people. I'm scared.
You're crazy.
Don't say that.
Multiple fractures left leg, severe concussion, blood type O positive. That's rough to come by. Do we have a sufficient supply?
Yes, doctor.
Do you think I did it on purpose?
If you hadn't been so drunk and run into that car, I wouldn't be a cripple now, would I?
The donor is a patient at the state mental hospital.
Some guy killed one of the orderlies and escaped from the crowded hospital.
You mean the loony bin? That's in Corvallis County, right? Out of our jurisdiction, right?
Hey, where you headed?
San Francisco.
Jesus Christ. You've been playing that same thing for over an hour. Don't you know anything else?
I told you my daddy made this for me just before he died. You're just like all the rest. They tried to take it away from me too, but I got it back.
Hi.
Hi.
Where are you headed?
Stanford Bay. You going that far?
Well, I guess I can get you there. Hop in. Yeah. Hello, pretty girl.
And you are really weird. You think someone was following you or something.
Alrighty then, welcome back! That was the trailer for Blood Song, Frankie Avalon, the only Frankie Avalon movie I've ever seen.
I was watching this movie and I didn't make the connection until the second to last scene. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's where I've seen this guy before.
Which is weird that they didn't actually utilize him beyond the bad guy in this movie, because if you cast Elvis in your movie, you're going to have Elvis sing.
Elvis, want some lemonade?
Lemonade.
He was a big star at the time. Why didn't they use him?
I don't know. It's kind of like having David Bowie in Labyrinth, and he only does one song. It's like a waste.
Anyway, so let us get into the plot, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Frankie Avalon, whose name we can't remember because they only named him once or twice in the entire movie. And really, you look at him, it's like, oh, that's Frankie Avalon. And so Frankie, he ages and ages ago, when the movie first opens, it starts with him as a young child. And he comes home and he hears a ruckus in the front room. And all of a sudden, like this father figure busts in. There's some shouting. And the father figure murders the two couple who were having an illicit affair. And then he turns a gun on himself.
Right in front of the kid, no less, who sees the whole thing.
And he just kind of numbly just starts blowing on the pan flute.
This pan flute becomes an icon, if you will, later in the film. Because it's the one thing that Frankie is carrying with him that he's always playing it, not playing it very well, which is weird considering his talent.
It's a point of fixation that everybody orbits around, and he's playing it through the movie, and you know the people around him saying, man, that is a really shitty tune. You're really terrible at it. Stop doing that. And then he's like, you insulted my flute, and murders them. So, catch up to the modern day. or the modern day of about 1980 or thereabouts. And Frankie, he is in an insane asylum. And it would be a terrible movie if her antagonist, in fact, remained in locked up all movie long. So he breaks out.
Well, it worked with Silence of the Lambs, with one of the antagonists in the insane asylum the whole time. But that was a much better written movie.
And so he takes off down the coast. Meanwhile, we catch up with our final girl. Or what will be the final girl when we get to the end of the movie.
Her name is Marion.
Her name is Marion, played by Donna Wilkes, who you might remember best from, well, really, everybody will know her. It's like, oh, you're in Jaws 2.
Oh, my God!
You're one of the screaming teenagers in Jaws 2. But she's been in, like, a bunch of schlock. She was, like, in Angel. She was in a bunch of other exploitation stuff.
She's got one of those faces that when you see her in the movie, you're like, oh, yeah. And then you just can't put a name to her unless you did your homework.
She also has a broken family life because her daddy had a car accident and wound up crippling her.
She's got something not very well defined, wrong with her leg. And so she starts off in the movie wearing this support brace, and then in the earlier third of the movie, she visits the doctor. The doctor says you can take the brace off and gives her a cane. And she's walking with a cane for the rest of the film.
And a limp when she's trying to get away from the bad guys.
And it's kind of funny because even though she's a gimp, she can really truck on out of there when she's being chased.
However, being a gimp is a completely inappropriate word, Brad. You're a terrible person. Handicapped. The handicapped gimp. She runs off and she has an excuse now for why she falls when being chased by the bad guy because her leg doesn't work. Another plot point that we have with her is that early on in her backstory, when she was recovering from the accident, she got a blood transfusion from the crazy Frankie in the insane asylum. Which gives them this weird psychic connection thing.
And they don't really handle that well, and they don't really go anywhere with it. It's there for a couple of scenes, and then gone. They just stopped with it. You know, as soon as the guy shows up in town, he encounters her in real life, and the chase is on.
And the psychic connection just goes away.
Yeah.
So we catch up with Marion in modern day, modern day of 1980. And she has a really broken family life because her relationship with her dad, who went off the rails when the accident happened.
She blames him, and he is not very supportive of her.
Yes. He is a raging, raging alcoholic. So his drunkenness caused the accident, which alienated his family, which then perpetuated the self-destructive cycle because they're all, like, down on him.
Not just his daughter, but his wife, too. Kind of tragic because a lot of it is his own doing, and he knows it. He realizes it, and he feels guilty and ashamed about it, but he doesn't know how to handle it.
On the surface, you think, okay, this guy is just a one-dimensional asshole, and the only reason he is in this movie is so that we can get a cathartic release so that when he's killed by Frankie, which he gets killed by Frankie down the road, you say, yes, that prick deserved it. But I liked that here he is, he's having this feud with his family, and it's irreconcilable, and he just can't do anything with it. And finally, he comes to the terms of, you know, I need to make some sort of amends. And he goes to his daughter, and it's like, hey, I need to, you know, we need to talk this out. I'm really sorry. But she's in her room, she's locked the door, and she just turns the stereo up. And then Frankie arrives a few minutes later, and he's like, you know, hey, no, fuck you. I'm not going to let you kill my daughter. And they start fighting, and Frankie kills him. So he dies trying to make amends, and the daughter never, ever gets to have that final connection. I thought that was kind of an interesting, cool ending for a one-note character.
There's also a scene a little bit earlier on where after they've had an argument and she's gone off to school and he's gone to work, and he comes back and she's in bed, and he goes in and he sits down on the bed with her for a little bit, and he covers her with the blankets. And while he's sitting there looking at her, his wife comes in and stands in the doorway and watches him watch her. But you can see that he's trying to put things together in his mind and try and patch things up with his daughter and his wife.
And the catalyst is that scene happens right after she gets rid of the leg brace and she's got the cane. And the cane is leaning up against her bed while she's sleeping. He comes in and sees the cane and says, oh, wait a minute, this situation can be salvaged. And that's the spark that sets off the whole redemption arc that fails.
And to have a character that's not the protagonist going through a development arc like this, you don't really see that an awful lot, especially with somebody that's in an antagonistic relationship with the hero.
And that's the frustrating thing about the movie, because there is some good bits to it. I really like what they did with the father, but the rest of it is really rote and by the numbers and kind of just Frankie comes into town and he starts doing the Halloween thing where he's standing behind a bush and then she sees him and he's gone, or he drives past slowly at the school, and there's a whole bunch of padding.
There is some development between Marion and her boyfriend. But, you know, he's a fisherman's hand, and he's making arrangements to set up a different life in Portland. But he hasn't quite got all of his ducks in a row, and he's got to do an interview for a job up there. And so there's this kind of pulling away that the two of them are doing so they can manage to put together an adult life together later. But it's not quite coming together the way they want it, because they have to do like regular going to school and working.
And daddy doesn't like the boyfriend.
Oh yeah, this is a real big issue between the daughter and the dad, because the dad thinks he's a complete waste of time because he's a fisherman's hand.
And so the movie just kind of follows the, connects the dots to slasher final girl stages.
But the other thing was the final sequence, which I did still enjoy, that took place in a sawmill.
Yeah, there's all these great spinning blades and chopping things, and there's like this one log going through this de-skinner, and I'm sitting here the first time watching, it's like, oh, fuck yeah, this is going to be amazing, somebody's going to fall down, there's going to be a spray of blood, and that's where they're saving up all the money.
Nope.
Nothing happens with this amazing setting.
The one time somebody does get killed, he gets killed with a forklift. I mean, even with a forklift, that's kind of the more wasteful way of going about it. I mean, it would be more interesting to impale somebody on the tine.
Well, they couldn't afford the prosthetic of having a tine sticking out the back and up through his gut.
I liked it being set in a lumber mill. I mean, it's perfect for coastal Oregon.
It was a pretty well-constructed chase scene. I had no issue with the last 20 minutes of the movie, other than it didn't pay off the Chekhov's gun.
Oh, I love the bit where she's on top of the pallet. He basically lifts up the forklift and lifts it out and lowers her down. And he completely misses the fact that she does exactly what she does, which is jump off of the pallet and into the cab.
All right, so let's get into the very last scene of the movie, because I think it's kind of an ass pull. So let's set this up a little bit. So here they are, they're chasing each other through this amazing setting, and all this stuff's flying around, and he's chasing her with the forklift, and crashes through a wall, crashes through some wires, a big explosion. He flies out into the bay, and it sinks out of sight. The end, or so we think.
Yeah.
And then, so the police show up, the paramedics show up, they take Marion and they put her in the aid car, and they whisk her off to the hospital, because she has been hurt along the way. And then they get her to the hospital, they strap her down, they start trying to inject her with a presumably some sort of knockout drug or relaxative or some sort of, you know, sedative. And she's like, no. And they get it into her. And she's strapped to the bed. She's out. She's woozy. Meanwhile, the police are fishing the forklift out of the bay. And it's the dude who had been crushed earlier driving the thing, not Frankie.
Which is weird, because he didn't get crushed anywhere near the water.
It was Frankie driving into the water. Where the fuck did that come? But that's not the asshole that I'm complaining about. And so Frankie goes and limps off to find, conveniently enough, the boyfriend and murders him, grabs his clothes, and goes to the hospital. The very last scene is, so here's Marion strapped down, and Frankie comes in up out of the shadows. It's really cool looking, and then he just pulls out this knife, and you cut to the end credits.
Yep.
Presumably, she is now dead. She was this badass. She was a really cool character. And then you get the ending she doesn't deserve.
Yeah, I know. I didn't like the ending at all. Now, it's kind of a trope in the genre to have a coming back from death for the killer.
I have no issue with that.
They do this all the time. But you're absolutely right. The character didn't deserve that at all. She was pretty awesome. You know, she fights. She is likable. And then she's gone. It's like, man, my emotional connection just got severed.
Let's talk about some other technical aspects of the movie now that we've gone pretty much over the plot. Like the fucking music. Oh, did I just tip my hand about the music?
Yeah, the music was pretty bad.
The problem is that it's this 80s synth, early 80s synth, but it's terrible early 80s synth, not the good stuff.
I kind of liked it in the opening credits, and I wouldn't have an issue with it if that's the only place they had it, but they didn't go with that.
And the other problem that I had with the music is was that it was so loud that occasionally it would overpower the dialogue, so you couldn't hear what they were saying, and occasionally it was plot important.
Whoever did the music should be thrown into a sawmill.
What, so they can drive a forklift through the wall and get away?
Well, I was thinking of the debarking machine, but oh well. Yeah, then the music was one of the least appealing things about this film. It was pretty distracting in a lot of places. Sometimes it worked. Most of the time it didn't. The setting was pretty awesome. I mean, I've been to Coos Bay where this is filmed. You've been to Coos Bay.
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
It's some beautiful, gorgeous countryside. It doesn't really use it to its full potential like some of the other movies we've seen. But oh, it's fair enough.
There's some great beach shots of, you know, the pinnacles that the Oregon coast is known for and sandy stretches interspersed with rocks. There's some good forest shots. There's shots of the town. And Coos Bay is a pretty little town.
And you will get to see a lot of those craggy, scraggly beaches as there's that one bit in the middle of the movie where the plot just grinds completely to halt. That her and her daddy have had a fight, and she goes out and sulks on the beach. And it's this 4 minutes of this puerile and stupid song as she's just kind of moping her way along.
The scenery in this is great, but the music is just like, it needed a completely different soundtrack for that sequence because it's terribly distracting from, A, her mopey, broody, angsty mood combined with the great setting.
Plus, you know, you've got this really shitty song. It's a damn shame that you didn't have a singing artist in your back pocket somewhere. I don't know, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Avalon actually did some stuff that I remember that actually would have worked pretty well for that sequence. But no. Completely wasted that opportunity.
So, yeah, the middle of the movie is a little bit padded.
Yeah. It sags. On the other hand, all of the characters are likable, even Frankie, the villain. Even the drunk dad is likable as a character. I mean, I don't think I'd like him as a person. But, you know, and the cops are pretty believable and likable.
I really liked Frankie in this movie. He plays against type of the sweet, innocent beach bunny or pop star sensation. He is this absolute just bastard. He's just really unhinged and he plays it to the hilt. And I really loved him doing that.
One instance where he's complete, which is a complete bastard moment, is after he kills the owner of the van and he's driving southward down the coast, he picks up this rather attractive redhead woman who's hitchhiking, and he takes her to a motel, he has sex with her, and then he strangles her with a necklace that he's just given her as a present.
Hey man, don't insult Frankie Avalon's flute playing or he will fucking murder you.
They kind of telegraphed what he did because he murdered the driver of the van for the exact same reason. So I knew this was going to happen, but it's just like the strangling sequence was brutal and kind of surprising, actually. You know, I didn't expect him to give her the murder weapon as a present.
And what was that chain made of? Holy Christ, because I don't know about you, but I've broken a couple of chains in my time. And, I mean, he just strangles the hell out of her with his, basically, the choker lives up to its name.
Yeah.
It's like, how does that not break a link?
I don't know. I mean, he was putting some serious force on that. And, I mean, okay, it'd be a little stronger than average because it had a pendant on it. You know, you need some strength to support that, but
it ain't going to be no throat strangling strength on that chain.
No. I mean, jewelry is comparatively fine, and no, the length should have snapped, but
it's murder movie physics. Who the fuck knows why that does what it does?
Man, just the cold-blooded shift in his mood that, you know, don't insult his panpipes.
Or like when he's chasing Marion through the sawmill and just his kind of almost, but not quite, the Warriors Come Out and Play sort of sing-songy quality. It's not quite there, but it's there, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that, too.
Oh, yeah, and the scene where she's walking, right after she's been walking along the beach, she sees the van, she recognizes it from her vision from earlier, and goes and takes a look at it, and around the corner, she sees him digging a hole, and there's something wrapped in black plastic.
And then the head pops out.
And then, just the hair.
Oh.
But she saw the redhead getting killed in one of her visions, and she recognizes the color of it, and she freaks out, and she pops back around the van, and he pops around too, and he's got a hatchet, and he's like,
"Hello, pretty girl."
And it's just like, oh man, the chills that went down my spine the way he said that.
I'm going to have to go check out some of his other stuff because I'm kind of curious if he can sustain that sort of acting when it's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to suspect I'm going to be really crushingly disappointed.
Yeah, I think so too. For some people, it's easier to play bad guys. And this might be one of those instances. Like, you can think of a few actors and actresses that you've only ever seen in villain roles.
Yeah.
That might be a case like this.
So you got any final thoughts then?
Nope. It's moderately entertaining, somewhat enjoyable, kind of predictable, middle-of-the-road slasher film.
You know, I can't push back against that argument at all. Yeah, you've just summed up my thanks.
Mm-hmm.
My thanks? What the fuck is a thanks? I ain't thanks good. I'll thanks good later. Bye-bye. So, Brad, you're the policeman. You're raiding the shop. Would you let the shopkeeper keep Bloodsong, or would you take it and destroy it?
I would definitely let the shopkeeper keep it. I saw no reason at all to compensate this film.
There was a sex scene, but I don't recall any nudity.
There was some. You could see her breasts in a few shots, but it was dark. It was pretty forgettable.
It wasn't your Jess Franco's super zoom-in vag cam that we've seen.
Oh, good Lord, no.
There was the scene with the head in the dumpster, and that was a little moist, but it wasn't really. It was quick. It was done.
Like yeah, that. there was a few other scenes where there was some blood, but it wasn't really all that wet. Nothing really splattered or sprayed.
The dude got his head whacked with a meat cleaver in the beginning, the guy with the van. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it wasn't a fountain of blood coming from his head. It was just an axe. Pff, done.
No, you saw the impact and you saw him lying on the ground, and that was it. And there was a bit where the killer was going after the dad, and he got several strikes in there. But it wasn't all that graphic.
So the only reason I can think of that might have been was that they saw blood in the title and said, oh my God, it's blood. And
that's a ridiculous reason to ban or confiscate something.
So, yes, this is clear, clear overreach by the DPP.
Definitely.
Definitely. So, Brad, mi amigo, did you like Blood Song?
I did. I thought it was pretty enjoyable. It wasn't anything that I'd go to see again within, like, a year or so. It was pretty basic. It was a little bit predictable. You know, it is a genre film.
Yeah, it's a pretty by-the-number slasher flick. It very much follows the template that was being laid down by Halloween and Friday the 13th at the time. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't have the budget to do lots and lots of kills, so it's pretty basic and very linear.
Yeah, the writing was good, the plot was good, the acting was pretty solid, they had a good setting.
I think the movie was, it was fine. It was adequate. It was very much like a cotton candy movie, where you take a big bite of cotton candy, and it's in your mouth, and it's flavorful, and it's terrible for you, and then it just instantly evaporates, and you forget about it, and you just move on with your day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I think too. You know, there wasn't anything especially good, but there wasn't anything bad.
So, there you go. It a perfectly adequate waste of an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll catch you next week then, won't we?
All right.
All righty then.
Ciao, Bella.
At our refreshment stand, your wish is our command. So the coffee we serve there is pure perfection.
All right. Thank you for joining us as we completely tear apart poor old Frankie Avalon and one of his movies, one of his many, many, many movies, none of which we're going to be covering on the Video Nasty Project. Next week, however, we've got two-time repeat offender and consummate werewolf Paul Nashe in The Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll. So drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you then. Until that time, stay evil.
This is the song written for the Trey and Chase. This is the Chase, Rocky and Ken. He tried to kill me with a fork.